Thanks to Shopify for supporting the Productivity Show. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like ourselves the resources once reserved only for big business. For a free 14-day trial and full access to Shopify's entire suite of features, go to shopify.com/TPS. Thanks also to Avast for supporting the podcast. Avast's new all-in-one solution, Avast One, helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through a range of features. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com.
Welcome to the Productivity Show, a podcast where we believe that you can get the important things done without having to sacrifice your health, family, and things that matter to you. My name is Tan. I'm the CEO and founder of Asian Efficiency, where we help people become more productive at work and in life. And today I'm, of course, joined by my co-host, Brooks Duncan. How are you today, Brooks?
I'm really, really good. How's it going with you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to go over some stuff that's been happening in our industry. Like, today's podcast is all about, you know, what's happening in our space, new trends, things you need to be aware of, interesting updates in terms of apps and tools and software. And so we thought it'd be fun to kind of go over that here today. Aside from the industry news, we'll also have three important topics to go over. One is the 40-hour work week an outdated concept? One thing we've seen pop up is more companies are moving away from that, and we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about, are Google suggestions helpful or annoying? This is something Brooks proposed. I'm really curious to hear what we're going to be talking about here. But also, I'm sure you've been in this situation before. What do you do when people you admire give conflicting advice, especially around productivity? You might look at us, you might look at other people, but we might contradict each other. What do you do then? Well, we're going to be talking about how to handle that. So you can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/402. And just to give a sneak peek on next week's episode, I'm going to be talking to Chris Sparks. He's a former top 20 poker player in the world. And we're going to be talking about high performance mental models and advanced productivity strategies. So you definitely don't want to miss out on next week's episode. As always, we'd like to kick things off with our top three favorite resources. And Brooks, what do you have in store for us here?
All right. So the first thing is going to sound really funny. It's an app called WeCroak, and it's available for iOS and Android. And basically what it does is it reminds you 5 times a day that you're going to die, which sounds really weird. And if you tap on it, it'll give you like a quote or whatever. I first heard about this app when I was listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast. He was in Antarctica talking to Matt Mullenweg, the founder of WordPress, and they were talking about the app. And the basic idea is it's the whole memento mori thing, you know, the Stoics, and this idea that if you keep in perspective that, hey, we're all here for a limited amount of time, and this thing you're stressing out about really in the grand scheme of things doesn't really need to stress you out, and, you know, are you really doing your best work, all that type of stuff. It takes us to the extreme by reminding you 5 times a day that you're going to die at some point. And it's a good mental reframe when you're in the middle of something. So I've been playing with the app, and it's kind of interesting. So that's number one. Number two is a bit more normal. It is called Pocket, and this is a read it later service, so you can capture things to read later. You can also discover new things to read, and it also in some cases will allow you to read articles behind a paywall, which doesn't work all the time, but if you send URLs to Pocket, you know, sometimes you can only read it and then it'll pop up, read a little bit, and then it will pop up. Sometimes if you send it to Pocket, you can read the whole thing. And the third one is a book called The Cartoon Introduction to Economics, Volume 2, about macroeconomics. And basically, it helps you learn the kind of bigger picture macroeconomic concepts, but it does it through cartoon illustrations. So it's fun, it's simple, it's education. I have a similar book also about statistics. So if you're like a visual learner, check out these cartoon guides, cartoon introductions, because they're really handy. And you can learn about all of these at theproductivityshow.com/402. So that is our top three resource. And so what we thought we'd do, and we do this episode every few weeks, is we go and we talk about some of the things that are happening in the world of productivity, and then we do a little deeper dive into some other productivity topics and news. And so usually it's Tan that does this, but I'm going to kick it off this time. And the first topic I want to bring up is Notion. So we've talked about Notion a number of times here on the podcast. We're going to be doing some more podcast episodes on it in the future. But one thing we've really noticed is that Notion is making really a big push into business. And it's inevitable for this type of software. Really the real money, especially once these companies take a lot of funding, is in like small and medium businesses and larger if possible, not so much individuals. And I really thought about this when Notion a while ago had their annual event called Block by Block, great name, where they talk about, it's a usual event where they unveil new features and stuff like that. And we'll link to a recap, which tells you everything about that. But one of them it allows you to do is organize the sidebar into different teams or functions. So if you've tried to use Notion in the past and maybe it's been a little disorganized or you see everything, even the stuff you don't need to see, this will be a great feature once it rolls out because you can have things for like a marketing team, a development team, or certain functions or projects. It really keeps things manageable for bigger organizations. So once these tools get used in larger organizations, the key actually becomes not so much showing people more stuff, it's hiding more stuff so people can only see the stuff that they need to focus on. The second is they've improved their databases. And so databases, not the greatest name. I wish they had a better name for it, but it's basically when you're in Notion and you're like displaying information. And what they've added, and this is a great feature, is or they're going to add, is better views and filtering. So you can really like slice and dice things. You can see just what you want to see. And more importantly, the changes you make don't necessarily impact other people as well. So you can focus on what you want to focus on without messing up everybody else's stuff. And the third thing is, and this is a big one again for organizations, is what they call synced databases. And this allows you to connect Notion to external services like Google Calendar, Jira, and a few others. And what that allows you to do is bring that information into Notion. So for example, you can see your Google Calendar stuff in your Notion. So it avoids users having to flip between all these different systems. So that's a great feature. That's the first one, is Notion's push into business. The second one is kind of similar to topics that we've talked about recently, which is Google Calendar is rolling out appointment scheduling. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, Google Calendar, you've been able to see others' availability for a long time. They have those booking links that you've been able to do for a while. But now they're really moving into the more similar to Calendly area, sort of like we talked about Fantastical doing in a recent episode. And basically in Google Calendar, you're going to be able to, on certain plans, especially business plans, paid ones anyway, is you're able to create an actual booking page, which you've never been able to do before, which is available to external users. So just like Calendly, you can create a booking page and then people can see your availability without seeing all the stuff on it. And then they can book something exactly at the time that works for both of you. So we'll link to how that works. And I'm really looking forward to this rolling out. And then the third thing is that Wyze cameras, so W-Y-Z-E or Z-E, recently had a security flaw and they didn't tell anybody about it for 3 years. So they knew about it. What they did is they basically just stopped selling the cameras. Not all the cameras suffer from this. So if you have a Wyze camera, you don't have to like throw it in the garbage. But if you have a Wyze cam version one, you want to check into this because they've had this security flaw. Hackers would have to jump through some hoops to get access to your stuff, but it's just a good reminder. And the reason I wanted to mention it is because these smart home devices, we, Tan and I, you and I both have smart home devices, but it's really important that you keep them up to date and that you watch your security because sometimes there can be security holes. And if you just set it and forget it, you might not know about it. So make sure to always keep your smart home devices up to date. So those are the three industry roundup stuff that I thought I would mention today.
Yeah, that's really interesting about Google Calendar. I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't roll this out earlier. I'm sure they've seen all the trends of all these calendar schedulers, as we call them. So like Calendly and Schedule One's like taking off, like they're just really successful companies now built around this one particular feature in a way. And Google had all the ammo and ammunition to roll this out because most calendars nowadays are running on the Google backend anyway. So I'm glad they're doing it now, and it'll be interesting to see how many people actually will pick it up and use it, because if it's free and it has the same feature set to something like Calendly, great, right? But Calendly has been around for a while and has many features that people really like. And one of them is, for me personally, integration with Zoom. So if someone books a meeting with me, we automatically have a Zoom URL created just for that meeting. So we don't have to like send an additional, you know, email saying, hey, this is the Zoom link we're going to be using. It's already created ahead of time and it's in the calendar event itself. And going back to what you were talking about when it comes to Notion, I think this is really important for people to be aware of, in the sense that if you're using Notion for personal use and you don't have like a business use for it, knowing that, you know, if you have a business and you're a one-man person, like this software probably will scale pretty well towards like a bigger team as you start to grow your maybe organization or your small business. So that's kind of a nice thing to know of. But again, the main thing to be afraid of is, you know, bloatware, meaning, okay, they're going to add a lot of new features, a lot of new stuff, but is it going to make it slower? Is it going to have more features than you actually need? And kind of what you were saying earlier, Brooks, was, you know, at that point, the UI is all about how do we hide stuff as much as possible, not just like highlight, you know, what you actually need to do. So that's always a very tricky thing. So I'll be curious to see 6 months from now, a year from now, for people like you and I who use it maybe for individual use, if it's still going to be that good or if it's going to be overkill, right? So like a good analogy is, you know, Trello is great for personal use or for maybe 1, 2, 3 people. But if you're going to go beyond that, you really need something like Jira, right? But Jira is kind of overkill for one person. Like it's like way too complicated and complex, but it's great for teams. And so I'm curious if Notion is going to solve this problem and make it scalable enough for one person to grow it into a team, or if it might turn into something like Jira, where then it might be too much overkill. So it'd be interesting to see where this ends up in a year from now. Moving on here, I know we have a lot of stuff coming up here. So before we move over to industry happenings, I want to give a quick shout out to our TPS Plus subscribers. So we have an upgraded version of the podcast where you get episodes ad-free and a week early, plus some bonus content as well. So if you're interested in checking that out, or you want to sponsor the podcast or contribute in a way and say thank you, the best way to do that is actually to go to theproductivityshow.com/plus, so P-L-U-S. And you can do that by, you know, purchasing a membership where you get access to all the features and benefits that I just mentioned. But also you get a really cool t-shirt that says one tweak a week, which is something that we're known for. So I want to give a shout out to all of our TPS Plus listeners and subscribers. Thank you so much for supporting us here. And let's move on to the next section of the podcast here. And that is all about industry happening. So the first topic, Brooks, I kind of want to get your thoughts and feedback on this is, I was watching a bunch of videos on the news, and there was this video that showed up that says, you know, the 40-hour work week is an outdated idea. There's a lot of companies now moving towards a four-day work week. And then I read this Business Insider article as well, where this one company, Bolt, which is a huge company, like $11 billion valuation with 700 employees, recently decided to move from a five-day work week to a four-day work week. And they kind of did a report on this, Business Insider, on the results of it and the employee engagement, interviewing different employees about it. But the general take of it was, one, everyone really enjoyed it. But also, two, their analysis was potentially the whole great resignation thing and renaissance that we're kind of going through right now, which we've talked about on the podcast, has been possibly a driver behind this and kind of like another byproduct of the pandemic. So I think it's really interesting to see how we have all these different trends that are happening, from having no office or remote work in that sense, which we've been doing since 2011. They also talked about mental health days in that article, where people now, by having an extra day off, their mental health improves. Just general four-day work weeks, that becomes more of a known concept now. But also stuff like even like having no meetings on certain days so we can focus and actually do creative work. And these are things that we're kind of seeing that are happening right now and unfolding. But if you've been listening to Asian Efficiency and following us for a while, you know we've been talking about this stuff forever, right? We have a meeting day on Wednesday, so we don't have meetings on other days, right? We've talked about the four-day work weeks. So we've talked about mental health and stuff like that. And so it's kind of curious to see other people and companies, you know, catching up now. And, you know, I have so much to share about this, but I kind of want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting to me to read this. And, you know, there's videos on it and stuff too. But the thing that was interesting to me is to hear others' experience doing this the 4-day work week at scale, because, you know, we've talked about on the podcast doing it. We've done a few experiments with it. We talked about this in TPS 382. So if you go to theproductivityshow.com/382, we talked about this a little more in depth. But, you know, we're a small team, so we can get around a lot of things. So the interesting thing about their experiment, which is not an experiment anymore, it's reality, is doing it at scale, like you said, with 700 employees and all that sort of thing. And I think the way they did it was very smart, where they started with small tests. So they said, we're going to try doing this for a few months, see how it goes. I think they even did it a few times to experiment. And the reason that's so smart is because if they just said, hey, guys, we're going to a 4-day work week, and then later found that it wasn't working out, then that is very difficult to roll back. But if you just say, hey, this is a 3-month experiment, we're just going to see what we learn from it, then when that 3 months ends, then everybody kind of knows the deal. So I thought that was really smart. The other thing that I thought was really interesting is it showed the importance of buy-in from key people. So for example, they give an example in the article about how, first of all, the CEO was the one who drove it, very similar to how you were the one who drove it at AE. But also there was some other people throughout the organization, like they gave an example of a really senior up lawyer in the company who just didn't really buy in. So she kept trying to book people meetings on the Friday and stuff like that, that the company was off. And she noticed that people were like declining it more and more. Because at first, I think people were trying to take the day off, but they were invited to this meeting. So they're like, well, I guess I'll at least do this meeting, which kind of defeats the purpose. But eventually she realized more and more people were buying in, and eventually she bought in too. But it's really important that if you're going to do this, that everybody kind of follows it. Otherwise, it's going to start screwing things up if people kind of more and more have these little workarounds. And then the final thing that I thought was really interesting is the idea of there's certain, and I think the way they put it in the article was, you know, we're maybe working a 4-day work week, but it's in a 5-day work week world. And an example that they gave was their customer support department. It's not like all of a sudden their customers are going to stop calling and emailing on Fridays. So they needed to come up with creative solutions for how to do that. And they tried a few things like splitting up the team. And what they ended up doing is, I think, investing a little bit to have more coverage on those days, because they realized, and the key thing, and I think this is something my guess is you're going to touch on, is the thing is they did a 4-day work week, but the work that they needed to do and their goals didn't reduce, right? Everybody still needed to do the same amount of stuff, but in those 4 days, and how to make that work. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting to see all the challenges at scale, and it mirrored a lot with some of the things we've experienced as well. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I thought there was a good sign, first and foremost, that there's more publication around this, because I think probably in the next 10 years, a 4-day work week is going to be very common. I don't know if I can predict it in the next 5 years, but I think in the next 10 years, this will be very common. And I personally really love it. I think everyone else in our company loves it. Nobody ever, you know, was countering it. So as you were talking about how they rolled it out, like we did the same thing. We ran a small experiment. We said, hey, let's try it out for a month or 6 weeks, and then turned out to be 2 months, right? And then we rolled it back to 5 days. And then kind of for the same reasoning, it's hard to go back. So there's this hedonistic trap of, you know, once we get used to something, it's hard to go back. But if we pre-agree that we're going to roll back, then it's a lot easier. So yeah, when you were talking about, oh, you know, let's try it out for 3 months and then go back, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I said. Because for the exact same reason. So if you want to dive deeper into this and how we did it, we actually did a podcast about this a while back. It's episode 382, the 4-day work week experiments, tips and lessons learned. So if you go to theproductivityshow.com/382, you'll find it there as well. But yeah, I think this is a positive trend. I hope more companies will follow. And I think the big point there, like you mentioned too, is like, yes, we can do a 4-day work week, but we're still living in a 5-day work week world. And so what do we do with the other day where people are off, right? And that's a challenge that we have had to figure out as well. We basically said, hey, we're off. We'll see you on Monday. But For a bigger company, that's obviously not always a solution, especially if you're a service business or something. But that's a discussion for another time.
Now, that is one of my very favorite sounds in the world. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is more than a store. It lets you connect with your customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. So supercharge your knowledge, your sales, and your success. For a free 14-day trial, go to shopify.com/TPS, all in lowercase. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving you the resources that used to be just for big business, but customized for you, with a great-looking online store that brings your ideas to life and tools to manage and drive sales. Actually, this is good timing because the Shop app just announced to me that a package that I ordered through Shopify is arriving today. It's a present for my wife from a store run by a father and daughter team. It's a present for my wife. It's some purses. And that was all through Shopify. And that's the thing. The entrepreneurial journey is filled with ideas, and making your ideas real opens endless possibilities. You might not actually know this, but Asian Efficiency started as just a blog with Tan and his partner writing articles, and I joined a little later. They had the idea to have a podcast, they had the idea to have resources that would help people, but we had to take those ideas and turn them into action. And that's one thing I love about Shopify. It makes it so easy for anyone to take that action, to take their idea and turn it into a successful business. Shopify powers millions of entrepreneurs just like us, from first sale to full scale, and every 28 seconds, a small business owner makes their very first sale on Shopify. So get started by building and customizing your online store with no coding or design experience. You can access powerful tools to help you find customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. You can gain knowledge and confidence with resources to help you succeed, and you are never alone. There's 24/7 support ready to help you out with any questions that you have. Like I said, Shopify is more than a store. It grows with you, and it's a possibility all powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/TPS, that's all in lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/TPS right now. If you've ever looked into security software for your devices, you've probably heard of Avast. Avast is a global leader in cybersecurity for more than 30 years and is trusted by over 435 million users. Avast empowers you with digital safety and privacy no matter who you are, where you are, or how you connect. So enjoy the opportunities that come with being connected, but on your terms. You want to keep yourself safe. Avast's new all-in-one solution, Avast One, helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through a whole range of features. You can learn more about those features and about Avast One at avast.com. Avast has been one of the most trusted names in antivirus for years and years, and Avast One still has award-winning antivirus that stops viruses and malware from harming your devices. However, Avast One has a lot more security features than just antivirus. One example is firewall protection. It helps you keep your personal information secure, and it helps you prevent attacks that try to access your computers and steal your data. This is becoming just a bigger and bigger problem all the time. Avast One has both free and premium options, and I found it really easy to use. I installed it on my computer, and like I said, it didn't just do a quick virus scan. It did do that, but it also looked for browser issues, and it checked the rest of my system for privacy and security threats. So far, everything's good, but it's good to know that Avast is looking out for me. Avast prevents over 1.5 billion attacks every single month, and with Avast One, you can confidently take control of your online world without worrying about viruses, phishing attacks, ransomware, hacking attempts, and other cybercrimes. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com.
Moving on to the next topic here, the second topic. Brooks, you want to talk about Google suggestions?
Yeah. So the title I gave this section was, Are Google Suggestions Helpful or Annoying? And this is something I've noticed with Google's tools. So Gmail, Google Docs, I think even Google Sheets, Google Presentations, like all of the Google suites. Maybe in the past 6 months to a year, they're really, really upping their suggestions game. So you know, most tools, like almost any tool these days, will suggest words. So as you're typing, it might give you some word suggestion. But what Google's tools do is actually suggest the entire sentence. So you're typing a sentence and all of a sudden the entire sentence is suggested for autocomplete. And I found myself more and more just going with what they suggest. It's actually scarily accurate. And I think it really does make me more productive as I type in Google tools anyway. It's kind of like Text Expander, which we talk about a lot on the podcast, but you don't even need to type the shortcut. Somehow Google's AI just knows what you're going to say and completes it. So I was actually really, really impressed with this. But I was recently reading an article on The Verge, which we'll link to in the show notes. And the Verge's article is titled, "Google Docs Will Start Nudging Some Users to Write Less Dumbly." And so basically what they're going to start doing, and depending on the plan you have, it kind of depends on what they will suggest. But in addition to spelling and general grammar, which, you know, they've pretty much any tool does, they're going to have a purple squiggly now. So not just like the blue underline, the red underline, whatever. There's going to be a purple underline. And what they're going to do is start suggesting you to write more concisely. So suggestions where maybe it's a bit wordy, maybe you can drop some words. It's going to suggest when you're using passive voice, it's going to highlight that and suggest that you maybe use more active phrasing. It's also going to start warning you about inappropriate word choices. So if you're using words that are maybe considered offensive, and it will even make suggestions for inclusiveness. So if there's something that you're writing and maybe you could say it in a more inclusive way, it's going to suggest that too. And it's really interesting because, first of all, if you're somebody who does a lot of writing in Google tools, especially the business tools, a lot of these things seem like a direct attack. This seems to be a theme for this show. A lot of these seems to be a direct attack on tools like Grammarly, who has sponsored the podcast in the past, because Grammarly does a great job at conciseness and passive and active voice and that sort of thing, stuff going beyond general grammar. And it seems to me that if you're somebody who does a ton of writing in Google tools, this might allow you to just get away with not having Grammarly at all, as much as I love Grammarly. It also makes me wonder, too, if people are going to start freaking out maybe about Google choosing what is inappropriate and what is inclusive. So we'll see how that all shakes out. And these things you can all turn on and off, of course. But I just thought it was really interesting the way Google's really seems to be doubling down on the suggestions they make to you as you write. What about you, Tan? I know you're a Grammarly fan, for starters. What do you think of all this?
Yeah, so I do use this feature. I use it in Gmail where they help me finish sentences, which I find very helpful. I think the one thing that makes Grammarly a little different and maybe better in that sense is I like the fact that I can write something in another app and then paste it in Grammarly later and then see how I can improve my writing. Versus if I do it in Google Doc and I get feedback as I write, it's kind of distracting in a way because I can't focus because I'm editing and writing are two completely different ways of thinking and use of brain power. So as I'm writing, the last thing I want is the program to tell me you should change this word because then I'm losing my flow of thoughts. And so this is where Grammarly is so helpful because I can just, you know, write in my own app like Byword or something. And then go, okay, I'm done with this. You know, now maybe tomorrow or something, I'm going to edit it. And then tomorrow I'll open up, you know, Grammarly and paste it in there. And then I go, okay, let's edit this and make it more concise or make it more inclusive or whatever editing I need to do. And it's a very separate process. And so I like the fact that I can do it that way. But technically you could say, well, you could do the same thing with Google Docs then, right? So I wonder if it will replace Grammarly over time. And it's interesting how that could work out, because if you're like me and you don't work in Google Docs directly, then this is a great way to do that. But if you work in Google Docs all the time, I think it can be very difficult to get in flow state. And so if you're someone like me who gets easily distracted by stuff like this, like use a different app or tool to write and then just use this for, you know, editing purposes. So I think it would be a great thing. It would save me money as well because I pay for Grammarly right now. So it helps me save money. Great. And I personally like it in Gmail because in Gmail, I don't do like long form writing anyway. So I can see that being very helpful there. But for Google Docs, I'm a little bit wary.
Yep, I'm the same. I don't do a huge amount of writing in Google Docs for the exact same reason. I tend to write in a different app. For me, that's Ulysses. But I've really noticed that Google's really trying to take steps to make things easier. But I agree, might not be a bad plan to turn this stuff off until you're done writing and then turn it back on and see what it has to say.
All right, so let's move over to our last topic for today. And that's the third one here. So this is a thing I wanted to bring up because I was on YouTube the other day and I was watching a bunch of videos of YouTube creators who showcase their workflow and their productivity setup. So this is kind of a trend that's going on YouTube right now where people are showing off like their desk, their workspace, what apps they use, you know, their own quote unquote productivity system. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, as someone who teaches productivity, I of course have to click on that and watch that. And so it's kind of interesting to see how everyone has, you know, their own take on productivity and philosophy around that. And as I was reading the YouTube comments, I also saw how a lot of people were saying stuff like, oh, well, you do it this way. But last week I was watching this video and this other person said not to do it that way. And as I was reading more comments from all the different videos that I watched, I noticed like people were very conflicted. So what do you do when you look at all these YouTube creators as an example, but this could be, you know, in the workplace as well, or like, in, you know, when you read a lot of blogs or you listen to different podcasts and everyone gives conflicting advice. One person says to do X, another person says to do Y, right? So for example, one person might say, oh, you have to wake up at 5 a.m. to be productive. And another person says, no, it doesn't matter. You can wake up at 2 and just be as productive. Like, what do you do then, right? And I noticed a lot of people were very confused in the YouTube comments. So I'm kind of curious to hear what's your take on this. Like, how do you handle this, Brooks?
Well, I think the problem is even worse than that, because sometimes you'll, and this isn't just limited to YouTube, it's, you know, blogs or anything, podcasts even, is that if you, say, watch somebody's older video and then maybe watch a newer one, the advice they give could actually conflict with themselves because people's like workflow and thinking can evolve and change over time. So you've got a problem of everybody growing and evolving and their content living forever on the internet. And also, like you said, different people giving different advice. And we actually even did a podcast a while ago, TPS365, about how our productivity thinking has kind of evolved over time on these rules we used to live by. And I think the way that I approach this, because I noticed this too, you know, somebody will, I'll read something, I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds good. And then I'll read something else that completely goes against it. So I would say the way that I would personally handle this, and the way I usually do handle this, is if I'm evaluating between two things, I'll kind of look at, you know, which of these people's workflow and life and situation is kind of like most similar to mine. And if something's working for them, then it could be a reasonable thing to maybe at least give it a try to see if it works for me. So if I'm evaluating between two things, try to choose one that is like more similar to mine. However, let's say that I get a recommendation from something and I start doing it, and then I read this other recommendation that maybe goes against it. Generally, I think between two things, it almost doesn't matter which way you go. But the worst thing that you can do is to keep changing, switching back and forth based on different advice. So what I would recommend is try something out. If it's working for you, even if you read this other advice that goes the other way, just like set that aside from now and just stick with something to try to get momentum, because getting that momentum over time is more important than whatever like little tactic or something you're learning about. So that's what I think. How about you? How do you handle a situation?
So I think a big distinction that you have to make is, are we coming from like first principles or frameworks, or are we coming from this quote unquote works for me? So to give an example, if you look at getting things done, there's like five steps in there, right? Those are kind of like first principles. Like, you can apply this to any single person, regardless of your situation. And if you follow it, it will work for you. Just like with our framework, the T framework, time, energy, and attention, whether you are a single mother or a single dad, whether you are married and you have like 10 kids, whether, you know, you're old or young, you're a college student, like it doesn't really matter. The high level strategy of time, energy, and attention works for pretty much anybody. So that is something you can kind of see, like, this is kind of like an evergreen, timeless, like first principle kind of idea of like, okay, this could work for me. I just might have to slightly adjust it, but generally it will work for me. However, I think if you're getting advice from somebody who says like, hey, this is what personally works for me, and then you get advice from somebody who says, hey, this is what works for me, it's easy to get conflicting advice because, you know, their lifestyles are very different oftentimes, or even if they have the same lifestyle, their personalities or tendencies or cognitive thinking is different from each other and also oftentimes from you. And so those are things that are a little bit more personal. And anytime I recognize that pattern where things are very personal, I try to extrapolate and say, okay, what's actually the bigger idea behind it that makes it work for them, right? So if someone says, I have to wake up, you know, at 5 a.m. every single morning to get my stuff done, does that mean that I have to wake up at 5 a.m. or what's the underlying principle behind it? And if the underlying principle is that, you know, well, I have kids and like, you know, if they wake up at 7, like I have no time for myself, blah, 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 blah. Like then I go, okay, so we're trying to find some part of the day where we have time for ourselves, right? Does that mean 5 a.m. or does that mean maybe even 6 a.m. for me, right? Like the idea is there, but that doesn't mean that I have to wake up at 5 a.m. to make that happen because maybe, you know, I play soccer at night or something. Like there's just no way I can wake up at 5, right? So I'm always trying to extrapolate that and make that distinction of like, what's the principle or big idea behind it? You know, it requires a little bit more thinking. It's not easy in that sense because you can't be lazy and just say, oh, well, Brooke said this, you know, that's what I'm going to do, right? It's not quite that. But if you have conflicting advice, like the way I would handle that is just what I just described.
Yeah, it's a great point about what works for me versus the first principle. Like an example that pops to mind is just recently, every month we do a live masterclass where it's a live thing that we teach on different topics. And I was sharing how I have this like shortcut that's set up in the Shortcuts app in Apple that generates a OmniFocus template for when I'm going on trips to like all my packing lists and checklists and all this stuff. And I have it all automated, blah, blah, blah. The key thing is not that. The key thing is to make sure you have a checklist, right? Like how you do that checklist doesn't really matter. And whether you have yours in Evernote, whether I have mine in Reminders and OmniFocus, like it doesn't really matter. It seems like it's conflicting advice. Like, oh, Tan says to use Evernote, Brooke says to use Reminders. That is not actually conflicting advice. The general principle is the same. So yeah, that's a great point, is focus on the principles that these people are talking about and not so much on like the how they do things. That's a great suggestion.
Well, like all good things, they must come to an end. And that includes today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If there's anything that you've taken away from today, what I encourage you to do, as we always like to end it with an action item, is to write one thing down that you learned from us here today and then commit to doing that. So what's the one action item that you can take away from today? Because I know we've talked about a lot of different things here, and of all the things you've maybe taken mental note of or written down, like what's one thing you can commit to and do that this week? So that is all about speed of implementation, something that we're always known for and we want to encourage. And again, next week is all about high performance mental models and advanced productivity strategies. I'll be interviewing Chris Sparks, a former top 20 poker player in the world. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun there. And if you want to find links to everything that we talked about today, you can find them in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/402. Thanks again for being here with us today, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.